My name is Heather Allen. I'm Program Director for Renew Wisconsin, and it is my honor to introduce our keynote speaker for today. Our keynote is Catherine Hamilton. She is the chair of 38 North Solutions, a public policy consultancy specializing in clean energy and innovation. In this role, Catherine has been listed on the Solar 100 board of KWH Analytics and received a Cleany Award as Entrepreneur of the Year in 2018. Catherine was co-chair of the World Economic Forum's Future of Advanced Energy Technology Global Future Council and president of Grid Alternatives Mid-Atlantic. Catherine served as president of the GridWise Alliance, advocating for nearly $5 billion in funding for smart grid projects in the Recovery Act. And prior to that role, Catherine was a policy advisor at Good Energies, Inc., a private investment company with a portfolio in clean energy technologies of nearly $6 billion. She co-directed the American Bioenergy Association, working with the states of Maryland and New Jersey to develop renewable portfolio standards. And at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, NREL, in Washington, Catherine led buildings research and then managed government relations. Catherine spent a decade at Virginia Power designing overhead and underground electrical systems for commercial and residential developments. Catherine studied electrical engineering at Northern Virginia Community College and holds degrees from Cornell University and the Sorbonne. You might recognize her voice, because Catherine is part of the Energy Gang podcast at Green Tech Media. So let me welcome Catherine to the stage.
Thank you all so much. That is like the longest bio. It just says I'm old. Thank you so much. Thank you, Heather. Thank you, Tyler. Thanks to the entire Renew Wisconsin team, and thanks to not just y'all, but all y'all for coming and inviting me to do this. This is super exciting. I flew in yesterday from Washington, D.C., where it was a freakishly 60 degrees and sunny, and I got into the Uber, and I said, I feel like I landed in Antarctica. And the guy said, it could be worse. And I said, really? He said, we could be in Minnesota. And I was like, that's got to be the most Wisconsin thing I was welcome to when I landed. So thank you so much. I thought it might be useful to just kind of take you from a macro down to a micro perspective on kind of where we are, you know, based on my experience and kind of where Wisconsin sits in this. I'm not here to tell you all how great you're doing, although I will tell you how great you're doing because you all know that. But I can talk a little bit just about the experience I've had and where we kind of sit as a globe. First, the obvious, we are in a climate crisis. It is in our faces. It's changing the way we think about everything we do. It's changing the way we think about how we live and where we live, and it's making a difference with our policymakers everywhere on all levels. Another key piece is that electricity is fundamental to economic growth, and there are 1 billion people without electricity now, without access to electricity. We've given another 1 billion people electricity over the last few years, so that's good. But people are not satisfied now with, especially in developing countries, with just a solar panel and a light bulb. They want air conditioning. They want refrigeration. They want all of those services that we have in the developed world, and they want them to be economic and to help them spur economic growth. So that's increasing demand in a lot of places like India and Africa. Our demand has been fairly stagnant. I assume that's going to go up with the dawning of EVs and electrification. But overall, the globe is still growing in demand. The International Energy Agency tracks how we're doing and what the role of renewables is going to be for a 2-degree centigrade scenario. And that is the goal, is to keep global warming to 2 degrees, if at all possible. And you can see here, renewables is 35%. Efficiency is 40%. So we have to do both of those, efficiency being, of course, the first and cheapest. But renewables is going to have a huge part in that whole pie. And then they also track how are we doing globally on clean energy progress. So the places we're actually doing really well are solar and wind, electric vehicles, and energy storage. Those are really catching on. The prices have dropped precipitously. Those are
those are moving along really well. But there are a lot of areas that we're not doing very well on. One is nuclear, one is heavy-duty vehicles and light-duty vehicles, industrial processes, building materials. Efficiency needs to come a long way. And also other technologies like CCS and sort of other ways of looking at emissions are not coming along at the pace they need to. We have to accelerate the speed of transition. And this is an imperative as a globe, and I know you all have read everything I have too on the International Panel for Climate Change. I said we have about a dozen years before we'll really start seeing some catastrophic impacts. We are already seeing catastrophic impacts that have been accelerated by climate change. They may not have been instigated by it, but they're certainly made a lot worse. It is a force multiplier. So we have to do something. We have to keep fuel in the ground. We have to stop using it. We have to decommission the bad stuff, the dirty stuff, and try to accelerate clean. When I was just in the World Economic Forum's Advanced Energy Technology Council, and as a council a year ago, we met and said, all right, let's get a bunch of presentations about all these really cool technologies out there and how they're really going to help us transform. We had all these presentations, and then in the end, we said, you know what? We have what we need. We have almost all of the technology we need, and the nascent technology will be ready once we have fully deployed everything we already have. We just have to really accelerate what we have. Right now, our policy trajectory is insufficient as a globe to keep us below 2 degrees centigrade. So that's problematic. Right now, if you look at the commitments that all of the countries have made now that are in the Paris Accord, they will not help us make our goals. So next year's COP in Glasgow, the 2020 COP in Glasgow, which is the Conference of Parties for Climate Change, those goals are going to ratchet, and those policies are going to need to ratchet too. So all of this has to be really supercharged, and we have to have a step change. We can't just do this incrementally anymore. Signs of transition are really encouraging, though. A lot of corporations are stepping up. Some governments are stepping up. There are huge solar and storage projects popping up everywhere, including Australia, which has some of the worst climate policy. And then we really are at this a bit of a tipping point. But one thing we really have to look at is what customers are demanding. So it's not just the supply side. It's not, and corporations are customers too, but it's also just everyday people who are saying, we need to do things differently. I need to have more choices. I need to be able to have what I want to make my life cleaner and more sustainable. System integration is going to be absolutely critical to this. So all this connective tissue between what the supply side has, solar and wind, big utility scale projects, and the demand side. And 10 years ago when I was running the Gridwise Alliance, I had this vision. I was like, the supply and demand sides should be fungible. We have all these new technologies with smart grid, with demand side resources, demand response, that we should be able to have both sides be resources to the entire system. And it's been 10 years, and it's starting to happen, but it takes a really long time to change. And that's something we really need to accelerate, is making sure that the supply and demand sides are really able to interact in a way that enables our system to become more efficient and cleaner. And that will get us to 100% clean. We can't just have supply side renewables. We need a whole lot of other things all working together to make that happen. So one big issue is transition. I heard some about it this morning, and then I was just in a panel about the transition from coal. This is not unique to Wisconsin by any means. My family's from Appalachia, and they haven't had jobs in a really long time down there. And part of the issue is we have to, as communities, figure out what do we want our future to look like? Do we want our future to be where we are? Do we want it to be somewhere else? People who listen to the podcast know that Jigger's always like, get a bus ticket out of wherever you are and go to someplace else where the jobs are. And that makes sense in some cases to do that. There are a lot of people that are moving to places where the jobs are and where the industry is changing. But we can also change our own communities for the better. And there are a lot of communities in Appalachia I know well. They're mono economies. So they were built around one industry. And what that means is when that industry leaves, there is nothing left. So trying to figure out, what do we have? What do we have as a society and as communities that we can build from? And what do we need to bring in? And what tools do we need to do that? So transition is really really difficult. We have to accelerate it, but we also need to make sure we're planning and making it a social enterprise along the way. So on the U.S. federal policy landscape, and I'm a policy wonk type person, so I spent a lot of time on this. One of the big things that's happened is we have ceded international leadership on climate by saying we're not going to be in the Paris Accord. We have taken ourselves out of the table and out of the room, and that is really that is an important development. Even though we are lowering emissions as a country, even though states are moving forward very rapidly and communities moving forward rapidly, and as a country we are moving in the right direction, being absent from that table and being able to put pressure on other countries and being a peer and exerting some of that strength, it makes us lose control and also lose leadership and lose competitive edge, I think. So that is a development that has not been positive from a global perspective. There's also been a lot of executive action that has circumvented the legal process that Congress has. So Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has become much more politicized in that way, and they're pushing forward on policies that should take a legislative track rather than a regulatory track, in the same way our Environmental Protection Agency is doing the same way and rolling back regulations that are defying what Congress had originally set into law. So that is happening. At the same time, there is a new conversation in the House of Representatives specifically about climate change. Last year alone, I testified before three totally different committees and on three slightly different topics, because everybody is interested in how do we move forward. There's a select committee on the climate crisis that has been installed in the House of Representatives, and it's not a legislative committee, so they cannot propose legislation. They don't have jurisdiction, but they can say, here's some ideas, here's what we think you should be doing. It is a bipartisan select committee, and when I testified before them, and I testified about how do we get to 100% renewables, and I talked a lot about what all those pieces are, those connective tissues that need to help us get there. I had really good questions on both sides of the aisle. People are starting to feel climate change in a real way, and they want innovative solutions, and renewables are really well poised to do that. So I was very heartened. I'm very heartened that there's new leadership on climate change in the House of Representatives, and I think it's coming along in the Senate as well. The Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, which is chaired by Senator Murkowski from Alaska and Senator Manchin from West Virginia, they work really, really well together. They're thinking about, like, how can we get things done more incrementally, but they work together really well. And that is what we need in Congress, is for people to actually come together around issues and try to work on things in a way that moves everybody forward and allows everybody to benefit. And I also think that all of these demonstrations, and outside of the Capitol, I haven't been out there when Jane Fonda was arrested or anything, but there are a lot of people getting arrested right now. A lot of them are movie stars, so I don't really go over there. You know, that's not all. There are a lot of people on the grassroots level, and certainly in the state of Wisconsin too, who are really becoming much more aware and becoming much more activated by climate and trying to move to clean energy. And some of that energy needs to be focused on what are the real solutions that are going to get us there. But it means that there is a level of activity that was not there 10 years ago when cap and trade was being considered in Congress. It passed the House of Representatives and did not pass the Senate. And part of that is that there was not the grassroots level support that there is right now for some action. And there are also, I know incrementalists are made fun of constantly, but there are incremental things we can get done that are really, really important. And some of that could be in tax policy. We just had a tax bill that was actually a little bit of a failure at the end of last year. But tax policy is something that Congress really knows how to do. They're really good at tax policy. So let's use that to get a few things done that will help climate and clean energy. So there are tools that we have that can make a difference and feel incremental, but still get us to going in that same direction. This is the latest, if anybody doesn't know about this database, you should go check it out. It's a DESIRE database. It's run out of North Carolina State University, and they track state all kinds of state policies on clean energy. This is just the chart on renewable portfolio standards, so you can see kind of the states that are really ahead, or the states that have strong renewable portfolio standards and the states that have more modest portfolio goals. And, you know, there are some that aren't really moving. Wisconsin's not one of those. Virginia hasn't been very active, but I live in Virginia and have lived in Virginia most of my life, and I'm really happy because Virginia is going to really start. They're coming in hot on renewables, put it that way. States to watch. So California, of course. Now, California is a mess. And I think it's been a mess for all. It's really hard to do business in California. I work with a lot of distributed energy resource companies, and it's like, it's just really hard. The utilities, especially Pacific Gas and Electric, I'm sure you all have heard a lot about it, like where they have these, like they just cut off the electricity because there's going to be a fire. Nope, we're just going to cut you off for like a week. And it's like not sustainable. And they don't have any great solutions. So there are a lot of us out there trying to push solutions. Like, no, really, you can do microgrids. You can make this cost effective. You can have communities do this for themselves and really make sure that you have places for people to go where they can get relief and have energy. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens in California, especially where resilience is concerned, because it can't sustain the way it is and policy has to change. I just filed to be a party to their microgrid docket, and yet last night I was rejected on like 12 different counts, and it was all about like I had the wrong PDF format, so I'm gonna figure it out. I'm not good at that. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm terrible. In fact, my first job was, this is a side note, I was serving subpoenas for $6 an hour, and when I did that, I realized like I hate lawyers. I don't ever want to be a lawyer. Apologies to all the wonderful lawyers out there. The other thing is Hawaii. So Hawaii has performance-based rates. This is a big deal, and everybody's watching them. They've always been a little bit on the bleeding edge. They're like, you know, building the car, changing the tires while the car is moving. They're always trying to think of like, because they're going to go to zero emission technologies. They have to get off of imported fuel. I mean, it is absolutely an economic driver for them. And so they're trying performance-based rates, and we'll see how they work. I mean, this changes the whole way the utility construct works and changes the metrics that the utility gets paid on. And that's going to be really interesting. But the utility has, I mean, their hand was forced, but they've been really working hard to get this done, and I think they'll be able to do it, and I think they'll serve as a model. Now, they're different from a lot of other states because they are an island, set of islands, but still, we'll see if this model really works. Virginia, I think some new opportunities are coming in Virginia. I'm really excited about that. Right now, it's like a greenfield. It's like there's just not as much renewables as you would want there to be, and you want it to be in every part of the state, not just the urban parts of the state. So you want it down in the areas where some of my family lives, down, which, you know, way down close to Tennessee. And one of the new projects is a data facility that is going to have 3.5 megawatts of solar on it. It's completely rejuvenating that region, that part of the country, because you're going to create jobs from, and it's also on a reclaimed mine site. So the same skills that take to strip the land for a mine can also be used to rebuild it. And that's what they're doing. And to me, that is super hopeful, and it shows that there is a way to transition and to provide renewables to everybody. Minnesota. I'm very active in Minnesota from the demand side, and part of the question for me is, like, what is 100% going to look like? I mean, utilities are making big promises on 100%, and that is great. Utilities are already starting to periscope and say, like, we need to see around the corner, and, like, this is where we need to be. But what does that mean for everybody? And are third parties able to participate? And are you going to allow some really interesting new demand-side technologies and storage to be part of that equation? So seeing what that means is going to be pretty interesting to watch. Michigan has also, consumers has taken some really big positions on getting off of coal. But again, the utility wants to be in charge of their own future, and you can kind of understand that would be natural for a utility to be in charge of their future, but how much competition is that going to yield? So we'll see what happens there. Colorado is looking at shutting down coal. Also, Tri-State yesterday just announced that they're going to build renewables to backstop coal plants, the shutting down of coal plants in New Mexico and Colorado. And those are under securitization too. So while you, securitization is just getting a lower interest rate, refinancing basically over time so that customers aren't paying as much for assets that are going to eventually be shut down anyway, and paying that mortgage off. And then replacing those with renewables is going to be cheaper because you don't have the fuel costs and it's much, much cheaper over time. So that will be a win-win for the customer, and hopefully the utility too. And then Wisconsin. I'm so excited about Wisconsin. You guys are doing the step change. You are really amazing in what you're trying to get done here, with both of the executive orders, with some of the legislation that's been introduced, with some of the regulatory shifts that are taking place, with the steady march. And it's not even necessarily steady. I mean, you guys have gone from marching to running at top speed. Just the amount of renewables in the queue, in the MISO queue coming from Wisconsin is staggering, from 130 to 6,000 plus megawatts on solar alone. That's pretty stunning. Yay, you guys. It's all y'all. Investment in EV infrastructure, that is my failure. I had to take an Uber because I didn't sign up for your service in time, or I would have gotten one of those green taxis. That would have been awesome. And then the incumbents starting to change, and seeing what all the utilities are doing and how they're thinking about this and how they're trying to include people. And I know I've spoken with the folks at Madison Gas and Electric, and some of the creative ways they're thinking about transition is really, really encouraging. And I would just say that the gnarly issues that y'all are facing, everybody's facing. Every state that I work in has the same kinds of issues. One is how do we talk about clean energy? How do we talk about renewables? You all did a really smart thing here, and I didn't hear very much of it because I was taping the show this morning, so I got here a little bit late. But the stories, the narrative, we're going to tell you a story. And I feel like that's what can be connecting the dots within our community, is being able to tell those stories. How do we talk about this? How do we talk about it in a way that isn't terrifying, that doesn't make people set themselves on fire, but lets them think about solutions? What can we really do to change, and how can we make it so it's positive for everybody and everybody gets to benefit? How do we think about state versus federal policies? I work a lot on federal policy, and the issue of which states get to put what policies in, and how does that affect the whole federal space? I mean, that is a topic that everyone is grappling with, and no one has a solution to it, but it's not unique to Wisconsin. How do we accelerate deployment of EVs? This is such an issue, because EV infrastructure is just finding a business model for that is tricky. And that's something everybody's also trying to experiment with. I mean, thank goodness Volkswagen was so horrible, because now at least we have some money, right? So we have some money to play with. And then who manages the customer relationship? So a lot of utilities are saying, no, we are doing this. We don't want anybody coming in. We're going to do this. We own the customer. And not all utilities are really prepared to do that. Not all of them have great relationships with their customers. Not all of them have the tools to be able to access their customers. Not all utilities have the trust of their customers. So trying to find that balance of who's going to actually be able to come in and serve and provide choices for the customers is a real topic of discussion. And the folks in North Carolina said to me, look, whether or not the utility gives us permission, we're going to install distributed energy resources. And so you can either be with us or against us, but it's going to happen. And we don't need permission. And so, part of this is... Uh-oh. Is there a utility in this room? I could have, somehow done something horrible. I had no idea. No, I was the next one over. There we go. See the gnarly issues. Thank you so much. I'm completely incompetent. And then how do we incentivize that collaboration? And so how do we get everybody to kind of work together to make something happen? And then will the utilities survive? Will they survive in their current construct? What is it what is Ichilo going to look like in 10 years? And maybe it will look like HECO in Hawaii, and everybody will be on a different kind of rate, you know, performance-based rates, and the metrics will be different. Or maybe we'll have distribution system operators that are just wires companies. But the utility model is changing, and it'll change different in different places, but it'll be really interesting to see what happens. So these are all issues everybody's talking about. It's not unique to the state. But it is also incumbent upon the state to, like, be a leader and be an example and try things, try new experiments. And the good thing is everybody wants renewables. Everybody loves renewables. And they do not cause cancer. So, like, over 100 cities want renewables, over 100 private companies and investors. And I hope you all saw the BlackRock announcement. BlackRock is the largest company with assets under management. And for them to say everything is going to be pegged to climate change because it is considered an investment risk is huge. So that's a huge, huge thing. And once you start changing the financial institutions and hold them accountable for all your pension funds and all of your bank accounts, like all of this investment, we have to think about, like, where's it going? Is it going to something that's really, really risky and that's going to be stranded? Or is it going to go to something that's going to take us to the future? So these are huge things. Utilities that are wanting to go to 100% clean, that is great. I think it's, like, survival. I think it's really smart for them to do that. 74% of people believe that we should use as much solar as possible, and 70% that we should produce 100% of our electricity from renewable energy resources, and 75% of Trump supporters believe that we should accelerate deployment and use of clean energy. This is all really smart. It should not be political. It shouldn't be partisan. We should all want to do this. And I believe the public is there. So then how do we make a difference? And You can get arrested. I've never been arrested. I've never been arrested. I was thinking of all my kids. I have, like, a lot of kids, and, you know, there may have been some arrests, but not for climate. but you can do the marches. You can do all of that. But you can also talk to your regulators. You can show up to regulatory proceedings. You can show up to the legislature. You can show up to your city council. And you can talk to people and say, we can advocate on every single level we need to change. And it makes a difference. And it's already made a difference and is making a difference now. So over the holidays, I live not too far from the National Geographic headquarters, and they have amazing exhibits. So anybody who comes to D.C., you should take some time to go to National Geographic. It is incredible. And they have an exhibit called Becoming Jane. And I was taking my mother to it. I think she thought it was Jane Austen, but that's okay. It's Jane Goodall. And Jane Goodall has shifted. I mean, she changed the way we think about intelligence in animals and in chimpanzees and in the environment. She was just absolutely groundbreaking. And she did it just, like, by going and sitting and watching and earning their trust. She has completely shifted from doing that kind of scientific gathering, bless you, to really working on much more global environmental issues. And this is a quote from her. You cannot get through a single day without having an impact on the world around you. What you do makes a difference, and you have to decide what kind of difference you want to make. And I think every single person has a part to play. I think this is something that can bring us together. I think this is something that should not divide us. I find myself coming from D.C. and just not being able to watch the news most nights and saying, this climate, this renewable energy future should keep us together and have us going forward. And thank you for inviting me to be part of your transition, which is super exciting. Thanks, Wisconsin. And I'm happy to take questions. May I take questions?
Yeah. We still have note cards on tables, so if folks want to write down questions and then hold your note card in the air, we've got people who will gather them and then bring them up here. But while we're waiting for some questions from the audience, I'd like to ask you a question, Catherine.
Sure.
You mentioned incrementalism at the national level, at the federal level. What specific incremental policy choices would you like to see accomplished in the near term?
Yeah, so there are a bunch of bills that have been languishing in the Senate that are just waiting for Majority Leader McConnell to get them to the floor. Some of this is just like reauthorization of energy efficiency bills. It's like energy efficiency programs, doing weatherization assistance, LIHEAP. Like, there are all these programs that have been funded from the federal government that we need to re-up and refund. So things like that, expanding ARPA-E, which is a research program, really giving agencies, like, more authority to think about climate as a, you know, as a risk multiplier. Department of Defense certainly is doing that and thinking about it from a resilience standpoint. So I think doing things like that with our federal agencies would be really good. Now, I don't know if you all saw this last week, a bill was wasn't actually a legislative text, but a bill was announced by Chairman Pallone of the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House of Representatives. And it's a very sweeping bill. It's a climate change bill, and it's pegged to zero net emissions by 2050. 100% clean by 2050. It does not have a carbon tax, guys. It really doesn't. Well, first of all, that's not in their jurisdiction. So, and they think they can get there without that. I think we need to do some analysis and make sure that what they're proposing would help, would get us to that. But it's a really great bill because it addresses economy, you know, it's an economy-wide proposal. It addresses, you know, what they can within their jurisdiction. So some transportation, a lot of buildings, a lot of renewables, has a renewable electricity standard in it. It has a national climate bank, which would allow financing for resilience and for frontline communities to really to make renewable projects. And there's a Green Bank proposal for Wisconsin, I think, in the legislature too. But that would help provide projects to pencil out where they normally wouldn't pencil out. So in those areas where it seems like it's too expensive, you could then get a bank to do that for you, a nonprofit institution. So there are a lot of things like that that are out there that I think have a chance, especially some of these energy efficiency things. Like, most people don't hate energy efficiency. So I think those have a chance of getting through.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So this is from a residential solar installer. What do you think will happen to the federal solar tax credit and as it's currently being planned to phase out?
Yeah, so there was a movement at the end of last year to try to extend it. And there was just a big, it was a big mess at the end of the year anyway. So a lot of that fell off the table. I think there's going to be an attempt. There are not that many opportunities this year to do that. There are only a couple of windows of opportunity to try to move legislation like that. Maybe in the lame duck after the election, they're going to want to do some things. I think depending on what the politics are next year, I think there would be a chance of that happening. I wouldn't like put long-term investment into, yes, it's going to happen, but you know, there may be a couple of opportunities to do it.
Thank you. What are your thoughts on clean mass transit in the transition to reducing carbon emissions, and what policies are needed to move from a car-dependent society, even if there are EV cars?
I'm for it. this is how I get to work every day. That's standing.
She's holding on to the metro strap?
No, that's standing on a bus.
Oh, standing on a bus.
Sorry, my bus is full. that is a great place that we need to focus. And that's like a huge part of the economy that we haven't done enough in. So I think mass transit is enormous. I mean, that works great in cities. And then we need to think about other things for states that have a lot of rural areas and think about how we do that. I think, you know, my belief is that, like, when we get an electric F-150, it's like game over. We're there. It's all electric, you know.
Right.
That's the only other thing you need. And it's getting there. So I really believe that's going to happen. I do think that we need CAFE standards. We need, like, to set a floor, and we need to continue to ramp up. I mean, the thing about regulation is that it actually spurs innovation, and it keeps the U.S. ahead. The U.S. is the innovator to the world. I'm told this by everybody globally, and there are a bunch of things that we're losing ground on because of our policy, and that is tragic. We should not let that happen. So I think making sure that we reinstate very strong CAFE standards is going to be really important.
Thank you. And one last question for you, focused on the Hawaii performance-based utility structure. Can you tell us more about how that works and discuss the various alternatives in performance-based structures?
Oh, gosh.
Or as much
that is like such a rabbit hole. Who wanted to go down that rabbit hole?
Yeah, so it basically has, and there's like a whole white paper on it. You guys are welcome to go look. You can Google it, performance-based rates in Hawaii. And there's also like some pretty cool mapping tools, so you can go and see where the hot spots are in Hawaii that they're trying to resolve. I mean, in Hawaii, everybody's pretty much going solar. And one of the first issues was that the electric utility stopped interconnections because they said, if we interconnect all this rooftop solar, it's going to bring down the grid. So NREL did an experiment, and I think it was maybe Solar City and Hawaii Electric went and took a bunch of equipment to NREL and tested it, and it was like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. You're not going to bring down the grid. All you need are some good inverters. So they've got smart inverters. They were able to interconnect. I mean, these people are paying like $500 a month for electricity for their homes. And this is not what I would call a wealthy state at all. There are a lot of low and middle income people. So that's really changed the calculus. And then they had to think about, like, how are we going to then change the way the utility gets paid and allow them to still function as an entity. So they have a whole different set of metrics that are based on, you know, keeping it clean, making sure that it's cost effective for consumers, because you don't want consumer rates to go up. Making sure that all consumers have access to this. So I would just go and look at what all of the different metrics are out there and see how that's playing out. And my suspicion is that in different states and regions, you're going to have different metrics depending on the region and depending on the regional resources. So I think there are a lot of ways you could skin that cat.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here today. Let's give you a round of applause.
Thank you so much. Peace.